Well, thank you again for being here today, and it's actually kind of a nice day outside. It's actually, let me not have lightning strike me, it feels like summer. So it's good to have you all here. I will mention, by the way, that next Sunday will be our last Sunday for the services here in the sanctuary. We're going to do Father's Day, and I've asked Mark McGinty and Rich Tafey to talk about their perspective on being fathers and then how that may have changed over the course of their lives. So hope you might be willing to attend. And we will be doing more informal services over in the parish house or probably, most likely, outside in the backyard. And those will be announced in the B&B and the Oracle, which is the monthly publication. So this morning, I want to finish a series of services that I've done over the course of this year on the six sources. And as I said, those are listed on the back of the order of service. And last month, I switched them, and I don't quite remember why, but I did the sixth source last month, and the fifth one, which is on humanism, is the one that I will do today. And the opening words spoke to this particular source. Humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. Well, first, though, I've got to tell a story, because when you go to seminary, they say always start with a story. So that's what I tend to do over the last 25 years. In the fall of the year 2000, which feels like a long time ago, I started to do a one-year interim ministry in Marysville, Washington, north of Seattle. I'd been living in Oregon for a number of years, and I had to get Washington State license plates because they don't like it if you don't do that within a certain amount of time. So I'd been living in Oregon, so I went to have my car inspected and all the other stuff you have to do. And in Washington State, the places where you get license plates are franchises in every town. So I got my insurance, I had my emissions test, I'd filled out all the paperwork, and I went into the franchise to get my license plate in Marysville. And so I explained to the woman what I wanted, and I gave her all the paperwork, and she looked into her computer monitor. Now, we'll probably remember that computer monitors of that day were about this big and about this deep and about this high, and they took up a lot of space, and she was looking very intently at the monitor, and she said, "Uh-oh." Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but if anybody who's official says uh-oh to me, I get a little anxious. So naturally, I said, "Uh-oh, what?" She said, she looked up at me and she said, "Are you superstitious?" No, I don't think so. Why? And she said, "Well, the next license plate in line, in sequence, has a 666 on it. And that somebody who was really superstitious or really religious wouldn't want it." And I told her, "Oh, I'll take it anyway." "Are you sure?" "Well, yes, I'm a minister." And she looked at my check and she said, "You are a minister. What are you a minister of?" And I said, "Unitarian Universalists." And she said, "What are they?" And I said, "People who aren't very superstitious." Now, I know, as an aside, that people sometimes think that ministers make up stories. If you turn to the front of the order of service, you will see the picture of that license plate, because I knew that it would be useful in a service someday. And I've kept it all this time. People who aren't very superstitious. I think a lot of us would probably agree with that statement. We are here as 21st century Unitarian Universalists, and we don't have many of the trappings or dogma or creeds that a lot of other congregations around us do. And they take it for granted. But we're kind of out there on our own and a little bit outside some people's comfort zones. But there's a reason why that is important. But first, I want to give you a short history of the humanist movement, not only in the Unitarian Universalist movement, but also in the United States. In the early part of the 20th century, the stirrings of religious humanism were particularly felt in American intellectual and religious circles, primarily Unitarian and to an extent Universalist churches. The proclaiming of common sense and reason to explore what it meant to be a religious person and not rely so much on the more traditional beliefs that were all around us. Still, at that time, the most of the established Eastern Unitarian churches were Christian. They had crosses in the front of the sanctuary. The Lord's Prayer was spoken in unison on Sundays and memorized, by the way. And there were sermons based upon readings from Scripture. The hymns were traditional in format. And the primary difference between Unitarians and the rest of Protestant denominations and churches, well, it was twofold. One was that we were not Trinitarian, we were Unitarian. And then secondly, we were called like Episcopalians without the incense. We were a little bit kind of upper crust at that time. Around 1920, a dispute started between the New England Unitarians, who were a bit more conservative, and the Midwest Unitarians, most notably in Illinois. Many New England Unitarians were getting very concerned about the humanist movement in the churches in the Midwest, out there in the boonies, you know, the frontier and so on. They had proposed a creedal statement requiring that all Unitarians be Christian. This proposal was rejected out of hand. However, it led to very unhappy relations between the American Unitarian Association on the East Coast and then all of the groups to the West. In 1933, a group of intellectuals and mostly Unitarian ministers wrote the first Humanist Manifesto, and there have been several developed since then that kind of nuanced that first manifesto. It encouraged religious humanists to part ways with theism or a belief in God entirely. And this was a very bold idea, especially in the 20s and 30s. It had enormous impact on Unitarianism. Unitarian churches at that time were the home of Unitarian Christians and Unitarian humanists. And they didn't get along too terribly well. In fact, many of the Unitarian Christians ended up going to congregational churches. And there was a lot of debate, as you might expect. And search committees that would be looking for a new minister often would ask that person a very basic question before anything got started. Are you a theist or an atheist? And the decision to call or hire that minister depended upon what they said. After World War II, the Unitarian Fellowship Movement began, and scores of small Unitarian fellowships were started across the continent. Most were lay-led and became places where coffee hour became the most important part of the service. People would have intellectual conversations, there would be social justice, and community could be embraced without God language or the Bible. It was a very freeing experience for a lot of people, especially who had come out of very difficult religious experiences earlier in their lives. These congregations, or fellowships rather, affirmed the fifth assertion of the first manifesto that said, humanism asserts the nature of the universe makes unacceptable any supernatural or cosmic guarantees of human values. And for that era, that time, that was radical. In fact, it was beyond radical. It was totally outside the comfort zone of most other religious communities. And in fact, Unitarians were not welcome pretty much at any church whatsoever because of that. Well, times changed. A generational change took place, and people who were born after, during, and after World War II started coming to our fellowships and churches asking variations of this question. Is this a place where I can learn about spirituality? There was usually a long and awkward silence. In the words of former UUA President William Schultz, the feeling among many Unitarian Universalist communities was, the quote, that God seems somehow to have snuck in the back door of our societies after having successfully been fended off for five decades at the front. And there was a lot of suspicion about it, and there was a lot of anger about it. And I realized later that a key word, which I'll talk about another time, was spirituality. Because for a lot of people, the word spirituality was equated with the word God. And so there was a knee-jerk reactive, no, we don't do that here. So it's been nearly a century since the Humanist Manifesto was published. The American religious landscape has changed dramatically since then. People who call themselves spiritual but not religious have become a major percentage of the American population. Many Christian mainstream congregations have dwindled in numbers, including many churches in this area. And the same is true of many Unitarian Universalist congregations. And so I've wondered for a number of years now, is if our Unitarian Universalist reliance and focus and embrace of religious humanism has in fact hindered us to our future of liberal religion. And mind you, I do not know the answer. But I want to go back to that word that the woman used at the license plate place, superstitious, or superstition, if you will. We have a meditation group that meets on Wednesdays and Thursdays here, and so I threw out the question of, what do you think superstition is? And we came up with great answers. Walking beneath a ladder. And by the way, if you walk beneath a ladder and you're realizing, oh, this is a no-no, one of the old ways of taking care of that was to spit through the rungs of the ladder, and that would take care of any bad juju with it. Stepping on cracks on the sidewalk would break your mother's back. Using the phrase, knock on wood. Friday the 13th, or other uses or non-uses of the number 13. And in Unitarian humanist circles, another superstition was a belief in God. It was supernaturalism and superstition, because it could not rely on scientific evidence or reason or rationality. Any religion that relied on myth or ancient stories was suspect, because not reasonable and not logical. And of course, as you might expect, this was particularly true of Christianity and the Bible. So many of our congregations, in fact, most of them outside of New England, put aside all Western religious traditions and relied on, later, the sources and principles to shape a theology of an individual freedom of belief. In other words, it was up to each of us to learn, what does religion mean to us, what does spirituality mean to us, and how do we live our lives well? And so we were given the tools to be able to do that ourselves without a creed or dogma to back it up. And I suspect that's probably true here, although you're nearly 200 years old, and I don't know your entire history, but I do know that you have some words on your website that are very powerful. A beacon for free thinkers since 1825. And that to me means that people who come in these doors are welcome and also welcome to be able to discern, evolve, and sometimes correct their leanings on religious life that they've learned earlier in their lives, or to develop their spiritual practices to make us better people. Now, does that mean that people who believe in a creator God aren't welcome here? I think they are. How about those people who believe in the wisdom teachings of Jesus? I definitely think they're welcome here. This is why I think those six sources on the back are really critical to answer the questions that we have, despite whatever religious leanings we've had, or what we've been taught, or how we've been punished. How do we learn what really the core of religion and spirituality is about? And I've always believed that the six sources give us guidance. Why? Each source gives us unique insights to the questions of human existence. Each source reminds us that no one source is the right one and all the others are wrong and therefore not worthy. Each source can teach us wisdom, compassion, and the value of inclusion in safety and in harmony, to be able to understand fully that there are many ways to look at and experience that invisible essence that we don't understand and we can't grasp and decide. Let's say cosmology, let's say God, let's say ultimate awareness, let's say awakening, let's say nirvana. There are all kinds of words to use. How do we understand them? Because they're part of who we are. This brings me back to another story about my license plates. About a month after I got the license plates, I was stopped in Snohomish, which is a town near Marysville, Washington. And I was stopped near where I lived because I had a headlight out. And it was dark outside. And I don't remember much about it except the officer who came to my car was, you know, pretty young, as I recall. And I passed over my paperwork and just casually mentioned in passing that I was a minister in Marysville. He and his partner came back after a few minutes and said, "Well, you got to get your headlight fixed, please, because it's dark." And I said, "Okay, fair enough." And he said, "You said you're a minister?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Do you realize what's on your license plate? That's the mark of the beast in Revelations." And I said, "Yes, I know." And I gave a very amended, brief explanation of what had happened. But I said, which I hadn't said before, I said, "Well, I took this plate so that no one else would have to have it themselves." And the police officers were quite amused, and they laughed, and they went back to their car. And it was all good, except I did not mention that I was a Unitarian Universalist minister, and I didn't mention superstition. I felt then, and I would feel now, that that would have been unwise and possibly unsafe. I have safety here in a religious community that is open-minded and open-hearted. And to me, one of the great gifts and continuing gifts of religious humanism is where, at least at this point in time, we can ask questions, we can have spirited debates, and we can challenge orthodoxy in any form that it is. And one example that I'll give you is 2 years ago, before COVID, I did a class on Jesus Reconsidered, talking about the historical Jesus and putting everything after the Easter story aside to really ask the question, who was this man, who was this minister, and he was a revolutionary, why? And how does it affect us 2,000 years later? And it was challenging orthodoxy, by the way. Here, in this place, is where our spiritual evolution moves forward with every new visitor who brings us new ideas, new life, and new dreams. Here is the place where not only humanism, but all the other sources live together because we're so different. And yet, at the same time, we have the same values, we have the same caring, and we have the same questions. Here is the place that you do not have to leave your imagination or your critical thinking at the door, because every one of us is welcome. And we really want to hear each other to understand what this world and existence is all about. And may that be part of our mission going forward. Thank you. We will now turn to